Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We're always interested in your thoughts. Drop us a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com with your suggestions and comments. Let us know what's going on where you are. This is a pretty good time of year for families. Get-togethers, big meals, memories. And every year, we're reminded of the different kinds of families. An Indiana author has written a novel about coming of age in the early 1950s in Indianapolis. Dwight Ritter is the author, and a key figure in his book, Growing Up White, is Georgie, the black housekeeper for his wealthy white family.
A lot of people say this book is about race, but it's not. This book is about friendship, and it's about time somebody talked about friendship and the wonderful friends that I had. And I was a white kid, and I was raised by a wealthy doctor in Indianapolis. My mother was a concert pianist from Boston. She was a child prodigy, and she did a concert at Boston Symphony Hall when she was 9 years old, and for some reason ended up in Indianapolis marrying this ultra-liberal white doctor. And but her profession, she was never around. She was giving concerts. She gave concerts in Russia back then. And so she was traveling all over the world. My dad was making house calls. And my younger brother was a very gifted musician. And so mom took him with her. And then my older brother was 2 years older, and he was capable of taking care of himself. And all I could do is get in trouble. So we were cared for by this woman named Georgie. And Georgie is the only real name in the book. I kept her name and I changed everybody else's name. And she was tough. She raised my dad. And after she'd worked for us for about 2 weeks, she took me out back. She took my brother out back and peeled a limb off a tree and beat the hell out of him because he lied to her. And he said that the Bible was a book for old black people. And oh, she
was an African-American.
Yeah, she was. And so it was that just really settled things. So finally, what Georgie said to my mom and dad, she said that when I get off the school bus, I'll go to her house. And then my mother would pick me up on the way back. She was teaching school at the old Tudor Hall School here when it was a girls' school. And so after school every day, I would be over in her neighborhood, which is right very close around here. And then on the weekends, every Saturday, I was here every Saturday from the time I was 10 until I was about 15. And I fell in love with my first girlfriend, and she was an African-American, and boy, did that raise a stink.
And give us an idea of the time period.
This is the 50s, about 1954, and it was hot. And Indianapolis was a real hotbed of racism. This was the home of the Ku Klux Klan back then. So this was a real hotbed than people think. Well, no, I thought Alabama was. This was really something back then. And especially for me to come in here, and I had friends who all went to Crispus Attucks, which was a local high school for all blacks. I just spent so much time here, and it was just such a meaningful thing. And so it never went away. And when Georgie died in about 1976, and I was living in Boston and working in Boston. And so I got a call from my dad, and we knew that Georgie wasn't doing well. And so he said, he called me Muggsy. He said, Muggsy, he said, you'll need to come home. Georgie passed away. And I couldn't. I went out and I got drunk, and I was gone for 2 weeks, and my wife was worried, and I just couldn't bring myself because she was my mother. She was the one that raised me, and all of her friends in her neighborhood were all my relatives. And it was just the memory of her kept there. Now, this is my 13th book, and I started writing this about 12 years ago, and I couldn't figure out what the story was because I tried to write a true story, a memoir. But that wasn't really very exciting. But there were a lot of things that happened in the neighborhood to other people. And there were characters that I met that blended well with other characters. And so I created this fantasy world. And I wrote a book in 2009 called Emerson the Magnificent. And after I finished the book, my wife got very sick and her hips got bad. And she was talking to me. She said, "Honey, I think you ought to start writing." Because I've been writing for 50 years, John. I mean, this is all I've ever done. And she said, "I think you ought to start writing another book." And I said, "Well, I don't know what to write about." And so she stood up and she had this cane, and it was Georgie's cane. And she handed the cane to me and she said, "I know what you're going to write about." And so I took the cane and I started on this book. It took, since then, it's taken 4 years and endless rewrites. But this is the best thing I've ever done. You know, I'm 75 and I've written the best book I could ever write.
Georgie's part of you. Talk about that.
Yeah, she's part of all of us. My brother still lives in town. And my brother and I always talk about her. And when my mom and dad were alive and Georgie had passed away, we always talked about her. We had a chair in the dining room where we lived, and there was my mom and my dad and the three boys in the family. There were six chairs around the table, and there was always a chair for Georgie. And even after Georgie was gone, there was always a chair for Georgie. She was part of the family. You hugged her, and she just was the most loving person. But boy, if you were nasty, she would whack you like you've never been whacked. And she hit my dad. So Dad knew it was coming. But she was wonderful.
Dwight Ritter, who grew up in the Indianapolis of the 1950s and has written a novel about that experience, especially the time he spent making friends in the African-American neighborhood of his housekeeper. The book is called Growing Up White from Iron Press.
Indiana Weekend, real radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line. Let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com.
My name is Dwight Ritter, and I'm from Indianapolis and from very close to Hawville, which is part of Indianapolis. I live on Cape Cod in Massachusetts, and I'm a full-time creative person, and I have been for 50 years. I worked in New York for a while, and then I worked in Boston. I wrote for Sesame Street. I've just written for everybody. I'm a journeyman writer, and this is my 13th book, and it's the story of a white boy growing up in a black neighborhood. Very simply, that's what it's the story of, and it's called Growing Up White. And the cover of the book is a picture of two black boys and a white boy, if you've seen it. And the white boy is me on the cover when I think I was 11 or 12.
Tell a story about her, you know, something that captures that spirit.
The one story was when she took my brother out back and whacked him.
What was his transgression?
Well, he had gone across the street. We lived on 38th Street, and he'd gone across the street to the Woodstock Country Club and snuck into the golf house, and he stole some fireworks. And he came back, and so he told me he wanted to light some fireworks in the backyard. And, oh, gosh, it was so much fun. We were putting them under tin cans, and they were blowing up in the air. And so Georgie came out and asked us what we were doing. And we said, "Oh, we're getting these fireworks." She said, "Where'd you get them?" And so my brother said, "I bought them." And she said, "What do you mean you bought them?" And she said, "You don't have any money." And he said, "Well, I bought them." And so she said, "Just a minute." She went back in. She got a Bible, and she brought the Bible out, and she said, "You put your hand on this Bible, and you tell me that you bought these." And that was when he said that was an old book for black people. And she went over and cut a limb off a tree, and she pulled his pants down and his underpants and whaled him. And my dad was a doctor, and when he came home, my brother was still crying. He was up in the bedroom crying, and he was like, "Oh, Dad, it was so horrible. You know, Georgie beat me, and I'm bleeding to death." And so Dad said, "Is that right?" And he says, "Yeah, I'm bleeding to death. We got to fire her." And Dad said, "Well, pull your pants down." And so my brother said, "What?" He said, "Yeah, pull your pants down. I want to see all the blood. I'm a doctor, you know." And there wasn't blood. He had some great welts on his butt. And that's when Dad said, "You know, one time she put my head real close to the wall, about 2 inches from the wall, and then she gave me a knuckle in the back of the head real hard, and it hit me, and then I banged my head into the wall." And I said, and I knew I wasn't going to push her anymore. And she taught so much, you know, and she taught values the way today you go to jail for teaching. But boy, I'll tell you, it was so mixed in with her feelings about religion, and she made us memorize parts of the Bible, and we learned the five first chapters of the Bible, and we called it Genesis, Exodus, Licorice, Numbers, and Deuteronomus. And as long as we were close, that was all right. So,
you grew up in Indianapolis of the early 1950s. That's the setting of the book. Mm-hmm. What would people of today not recognize in the Indianapolis of those days?
Oh.
Or the America, for that matter.
That's right. Well, there was a very big distinction racially among people, where white people just did not recognize African Americans at all. And back when I grew up, they had separate drinking fountains, and they used their own bathrooms. I mean, it was a different world. And boy, if anybody ever tried to take advantage of it, people would show up at their door.
And, what do you mean by that?
Well, there was the Ku Klux Klan was very much alive in the 50s on here, and there was an awful lot of dialogue that was really racist dialogue, and that was dangerous back then. And it's something that has been put under the covers for years and years, but it never went away. But it was. I grew up with it. And I wasn't aware of it. And now that sounds hard to believe, but when you grow up with something and it's part of your life, you don't think it's special. This is just something I do. And I knew some of the things that were happening to my friends were wrong, but, you know, I couldn't do anything about it. And we would hide. We'd shoot baskets in the alleys out here. And if anybody started coming around, we'd hide, or they'd hide me. And one of my friends had a big navy pea jacket. You know, they're sort of a blackish blue. So wherever I'd go, they'd cover my head with it. And so I'd have a little area there that where my face would stick out, and they'd pull it down if anybody came up. And because it was something that you just didn't do. And if my family being, you know, my family was an upper middle class doctor's family and his snooty wife, it was not the environment for them.
You were on the scene. You were in the neighborhood, almost in a child care situation, mm-hmm. and that reflects sort of the values that your parents had. They were okay with that, mm-hmm. but you had to hide this. You were people came around, and you were with these folks in Hawville in the black neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that.
Yeah, when I went to Shortridge High School here in town, and they had social clubs at Shortridge, and one of them was called the Corpse Club, and it was all white. All the clubs were white at Shortridge. And when we would have meetings, I would never tell anybody about my friends. And eventually they found out, and somebody accused me of my best friend being, and they used the N-word, which is horrible. And but I had to hide it. I couldn't tell anybody about it. They didn't want me in the Corpse Club anymore. And it was a very uncomfortable thing because I wanted to be popular. And when you're in high school and you're a freshman and sophomore, you want to be popular. And I was asked to be in this really popular club. But they didn't ask me in the beginning who my best friends were. So it was something that I had to hide.
That is Dwight Ritter, author of Growing Up White from Iron Press, about his experiences in Indianapolis in the early 1950s. The book draws upon the racial segregation and tension of that time, as well as the unexpected friendships that Ritter experienced when he began spending every day in the black neighborhood where his family's housekeeper lived.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
So there's this setting of Indianapolis in the early 1950s. And, you know, this is the time of Brown v. Board of Education. Mm-hmm. The country's beginning to change. And you've made it a work of fiction.
I fictionalized it because my dad was the doctor for the old Fox Burlesque Theater in Indianapolis. It's no longer is there. It's been torn down. And there was this rumor about a black stripper that came to Indianapolis in the 50s and how she was raped and beaten up after her first performance. And so that became a story with me. I fictionalized it. I made my dad be the doctor when she was taken to Methodist Hospital, and he examined her, and he found out that she had a venereal disease and that there were several men who had raped her, and they were wearing white sheets, and that over a period of the next 300 pages in the book, every once in a while, another prominent person in town goes and visits my dad because he has symptoms. That's the way the book evolved. The book evolved from something that happened, and then I put it in order and gave it plot, gave it structure.
The story of the black experience in Indianapolis also includes Indiana Avenue. Mm-hmm. And culture, jazz, music.
Oh, boy. It was just wonderful. Indiana Avenue was the place to go for music. And see, that's where the Fox was. And this was wonderful. And my mother, being a concert pianist who said that concert pianists were the whitest white people in the world. They had no rhythm. She could not keep time with her feet. And Georgie and all of us used to laugh at her because we tried to get her to do doo-wop, you know, and she got to be real good with gospel, which is in the book.
Is there a section? Is there a favorite part that you could read from? Can you?
I'm looking for. There was this wonderful thing about. There it was, about playing basketball with Ricky. There was a guy named Arky, and I invented Arky, but Arky was made up of a real close black friend of mine and a real close white friend of mine. The personalities, you know, were in there, and. And Arky could play basketball like you've never imagined. And I was always amazed at how he could play basketball. And so we got to this point where when I first met him and we were introducing each other, I was 2 feet from the basketball rim and I threw it and I missed it again for the 7th time. And I cried some more. You're the worst damn basketball player in the whole world. Not because you're white, not because you're short. You just plain stink. You're lucky you ain't like me. And he began laughing. And it suddenly became funny. The invisible lid over the basket. Arky's snot and blood smeared face. His swollen eye. I laughed, wiping snot from my cheek. Yeah, where'd you get such a stupid name as Arky? Sounds like a girl's name, Arky girl. Shows how dumb you are. It's short for Arkansas. That's one of the states in our union. You're so dumb you didn't know that. And he laughed. I'm so dumb. I know the capital is Little Rock. Next state east is Tennessee. Double N, double S, double E. Nashville's its capital, named after General Francis Nash. All that studying for the first time it paid off. Well, la-di-da for you. My name's Arkansas Emmanuel Johnson. My mama's from the state of Arkansas. My daddy's name was Emmanuel. I never met him. My new daddy's last name is Johnson. Okay. He wiped his nose again. Sure, I continued laughing. What you laughing at? You ought to see yourself. Your eyes closed and you got blood and boogers all over your face. You lucky you don't got a mirror, Mr. Know-It-All. He picked up the basketball and he shot it. Swish. Sure hasn't hurt my aim. What's your name? I forgot already. Ricky. Ricky Eli Stoner. Sure got a long way to go teaching you basketball, Ricky. Swish. And that was the first time we played basketball. The first of many times. I never improved drastically. I learned all the right moves, and I looked better than I was. Arky was smooth. He could fake me out so bad I felt like I had one leg shorter than the other. Then he'd effortlessly glide by me, take a couple of big steps, and lay in the ball, brushing the bottom of the net with his fingertips. Most always, he carried a basketball, sometimes bouncing it as he talked, never looking at it. He didn't need to look at it because the ball knew where his hand was.
Does that recall an actual event?
Yeah, very much so. And because I was an uncoordinated, very short little white kid with a crew cut, you know, and playing in the alleys. And there's a scene in here where there's a big fight that happens, and I was really discriminated against because I was white. So it shows both sides of the racism thing in here, where blacks discriminated against whites. They hated us. They had every reason to. And whites discriminated against blacks.
What do you want readers to walk away with this thinking differently
about? They need to talk with people. People don't talk with each other. People need to learn how to ask questions that people want to answer. And I know that if whenever I get into an environment, and especially in a mixed racial environment, instead of talking about how I feel, I like to find out how do they feel? And it's always new to me, and especially in a mixed racial environment. And you watch the looks on each other's faces because they've never bothered to do that. They're just all opinionated, secretly maybe inside, but they've never bothered to ask the right questions. They've never bothered, like when I saw the Rev out here, put my arms around him and hug him. And we need more of that.
Dwight Ritter, author of Growing Up White, the story of race and friendship in segregated Indianapolis of the 1950s. Not every author is able to translate their storytelling into spoken words for the microphone, but he is one who can. That's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Sean Ashcraft. Glad you could join us this time. Hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you'd like more information or have a suggestion. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Sean Ashcraft. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from IPR's listeners. We hope you'll join your friends who are IPR members. You can go to indianapublicradio.org or give us a call at 1-800-646-1812. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.